Well, hello out there in Radio Land, bbsradioland.com. This is Marty Ford. The radio show is You About Ready? And here we go. Live from the beautiful downtown basement of Bozo's Bar and Grill and Tonsawa Station, this is Marty Ford on bbsradio.com with my own brand of the Power Hour before you shower, because it's late at night. It's 9 o'clock on the East Coast, and it gets dark around 7. That's usually my bedtime, right after Wheel and Jeopardy. But Tuesday nights, I stay up late, because I want to bring you some good stuff so you can listen, learn, laugh, participate, and grow from listening to our show on bbsradio.com. If you care to call in, this is a call-in show, and we're hoping to increase the market share and demographics and listener base. So if you want to call in and discuss the kinds of things we talk about here, the number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. You can also send me an email that I'll look at later tonight and get back to you as soon as I can, probably tonight or tomorrow. The email address is hamp73@gmail.com. hamp73@gmail.com. And you know, it's Tuesday night again, and I feel like I was just here last Tuesday night and the Tuesday before that. And the week goes by so quickly. I end one show when I wake up Wednesday morning already planning the next show. And sometimes I don't get any ideas or thoughts until later in the week, which is kind of scary. But we always seem to come up with enough to fill the hour of power before you shower. And yes, it is hard to believe it's Tuesday again. And in fact, if you really want to know how fast a week goes, how about doing something like this? But if you really want to learn how 30 days goes, just go to the bank and sign an IOU, and that's with interest as well. We hope we have your interest on You About Ready, the bbsradio.com show you're listening to right now. 30 days goes real quick when you're on the line for some money, and that's doing it the legal way, through the bank or a lending office where there is a contract, and the consequences are take a little longer than dealing with other people. Last week, I forgot to give you the answer to last week's Brain Buster. You know, we always like to start the show with some critical thinking to get your brain working, because it's the end of the day here on the East Coast and dinner time out on the West Coast. And if you're listening while you're having dinner, listen closely, but not too closely, because I don't want you to get indigestion. And eat slowly. Chew your food 31 times. And eat right. We'll talk about that later. Last week, the Brain Buster was... what does everyone leave behind when they go home from the beach? What does everyone leave behind when they go home from the beach? And of course, the answer is we all leave our footprints behind. I know, we leave trash and garbage and refuse, all the same stuff, and we miss the can. Some of us forget our cell phone. And those guys out there with those electronic Geiger counters, I don't know what they are, what they call them, they find the good left behind stuff if they're lucky and they work hard enough. So you leave behind your footprints when you leave the beach. Everyone does, unless you're carrying your kids in a little backpack or snuggly or something like that. This week's Brain Buster is, how much does a pirate pay to have his ears pierced? How much does a pirate pay to have his ears pierced? Now, you know, the memory's starting to go, and hopefully I'll remember by the end of the hour to enlighten you with the humorous yet critically thought out answer to this Brain Buster. And we'll hope to do that tonight. And if not, maybe there's next week as well. Well, the government shutdown is in full swing. I know they have a counter on the side, if you look at the news, counting the days, the hours, the minutes, and all that stuff. My only question is, are the leaders of our country, leaders that is, we had a whole recitation on leadership a few weeks ago, and if you want to go back to listen and highlight some of the topics we cover on here, which include leadership, empowerment, ethics, veterans, obesity, kids in play, the schools and the use of them, the utility of them in off season, and a host of other topics, go to the bbsradio.com archive section, look up You About Ready, Marty Ford, and click on, and you'll hear some stuff that we previously talked about that we occasionally touch on during this Marty Mayhem hour. But sometimes I don't always stay on course. So the government shut down, and one way we could get it back going. Oh, by the way, I wanted to know, are the leaders who are telling us to stay tough and hang strong and hang in there and do all the make sacrifice. Are they getting their paycheck? I don't know. I'm hoping they don't, but you know, a real leader will make the sacrifices of the subordinates and the underlings and the peons and whoever else you want to call us on the bottom of the food chain. You know, good leadership leads by example. And although there's many bullies in the leadership position, arrogant as most of them are, they would take a good, they would set a good example for all of us by saying, yeah, you're taking a hit, I'm taking a hit. Right. And that would make people who are actually affected by the nickels and dimes that they're not collecting every day, that would make us feel like we have worthy leadership, not people who are hypocritical, not the same people that send our children off to fight in wars and stay home and count the money as it comes in from all their business investments, insider trading and government contracts, which they allow themselves to do by law. The insider trading, and Nancy Pelosi made that public in an interview, and I was quite shocked. But that's where the true arrogance comes in from the leadership and the bully mentality. But to get there's one way to get the government shutdown done, completed, and people back to work, hopefully retroactively paid, you know, instead of spending another $100 million or $100 billion on the war. Maybe we can pay the people who are involved in taking care of the business of our country. So we can really use a good Greek comedy. I guess it's a comedy, maybe a satire. Aristophanes wrote Lysistrata, or Lysistrata, or however you want to call it, where the women withheld themselves from the men who were fighting at war. You know, and I think they resolved it rather expeditiously, because you know, regardless if they men are members of the micro and soft club, they still need some tender loving care once in a while. And there was no pollination of any kind, right? And that could lead to a lot of anger. And you know, a bully with anger is a dangerous person, especially if he's micro and soft, right? And down in D.C., where you have all kinds of things going on, where the people who know the most say the least, probably through fear of retaliation or intimidation or bodily harm, when the public, when they make their information public about what goes on behind closed doors down there, it would be quite shocking, I'm sure. We get dribs and drabs on the news once in a while, whether it's true or not, who knows. We hope it is, because, you know, you want to believe nothing you see and half of what you hear, and you might be able to get some truth out of it some way, somehow, because we are seeking truth in the world. Unfortunately, it's hard to get truth from those we don't trust and can't trust by based on their history. So we can use the theme of that play, Lysistrata or Lysistrata, I don't know how to say it, I'm not that smart, and solve this thing right away and get the country back to working. We can pay for them, just like we pay for their health care and all the other things. Don't get me started, because, you know, national health care and a national lottery is part of our empowerment segment here, where we do introduce a way to pay for all the costs attributed to national health care and try to eliminate as much as reduce. We'll never eliminate it all, but we try to reduce as much as possible all the bribes, graft, corruptions, and fraud associated with all the fees incurred for health care. So if we clean that up, we have a system. You can go to archive section, look for it under National Health Care Lottery, or listen for it, I should say. National health care and national lottery. It's called the 2-year health lottery, and it raises enough money, more than enough money, to be upfront to pay for and maintain quality, good quality health care for people, so you don't have, so you can go to bed at night and not have the worries of what's going to happen if that's a disaster. And we don't want to. We want to eliminate that. There is a simple way to do it, and I think it should be called Everybody Cares, instead of one person cares. But when you're in a leadership position, you can take all the credit. It's amazing what can get done efficiently and expeditiously, and if you're not caring too much about who gets the credit for doing it. If you just put people to work on a mission, focused, streamline it, and do it, and not worry about accolades and parades and media attention and all the other things that go along with the hype. If you just do it for simplistic reasons, for the good of the people, by the people, of the people, and for the people, then you'll be quite pleased with their results. Talking about micro and soft, it's very difficult to go all in when you have instructions from your wife. I'm playing the husband part, and I do have a wife. I remember when we were young and married, I was old, but when we first got married, of course, we wanted to have some time with ourselves to learn and grow and be together, and it's blossomed into 25 years of absolute splendor and grace, but we wanted to have kids, and like a lot of people, we had setbacks and so forth, but I remember coming home one day and my wife saying, we have 30-minute clock or a window, whatever, window of opportunity, another one of the cliches that I can't stand. But anyway, we had a time frame of 30 minutes to do the deed. And the quickest way to go micro and soft is to have that facing you, right? And say, oh my God, I got to perform right now. I don't know how those guys do it in those movies, whatever they do. They must use spray on or something. But it's incredible that how you could not perform when you have to. You know, some people can't perform under that pressure. And I think if you break it down, most men will tell you at some time in their life, they had the condition of micro and soft and at a critical time of trying to conceive a child. You get orders from your doctor, commands from your wife, and you say, now! And you say, whoa, wait a minute, I got to watch the news or something, or look at the sports page or something. But it just doesn't work that way, and it just has to, it takes away the beauty and the love and the passion, and it's right down to business, right? And I guess if you frequent places of pleasure and you're listening to a clock tick, it's kind of hard to perform and maintain your equilibrium, among other things. So anyway, it's difficult to go all in. And all in has become another one of the cliches that we'll talk about later. I do want to talk about some personal redemption. And I hope that you follow this rather closely, as all things here on You About Ready, because they do have some place in our life. Redemption. If you wait long enough, it'll come to you, right? If you remember Michael Corleone in the movie, he said, I'm going to wait. And waiting is for the right time. And whatever they did, you know, in that. But that's a key line. And most life lessons can be learned from watching that movie, good and not so good. But anyway, I waited a year just about for this redemption, because last year, a TV commentator after, well, let's go back to the story. Ohio University, which I've mentioned here before, great school, great town, great community, everything about it. And we're out of towners. We're 500 miles away. But it was a tremendous experience for our family to have been involved there for 4 years, attending graduation as well. But last year, the football team, as they had previously done, I think the previous 2 years, I'm not sure if it was the third year in a row or the second, they won an invitation to a bowl game. Now, if I recall the numbers, there are 35 bowl games, so 70 teams, colleges in the country get the chance to go after a bowl victory, which brings a lot of status and, of course, some money to the university, which is great, you know, because as French Montana says, there ain't nothing more important than the moolah. You know that moolah reigns supreme. So last year, Ohio University played, I think, University of Louisiana Monroe down in Shreveport, Louisiana. And we were viewed the game, and it was great. And afterwards, and Ohio won by a lopsided score, and that's the way those games go. It could be anything. And afterwards, the commentators on the panel of experts that once you see the game for 3 hours, spend another hour telling you about what you just saw and reliving every moment, because I guess they have nothing else to go in their life, and they get paid. Anyway, a well-known sportscaster, former coach of major schools, well-known schools in the country, did a total thrashing of Ohio University, Athens, Ohio, and the community and the college. I mean, he just said, do they even have internet down there? Who are they? Where is Athens, Ohio? Did all that kind of derogatory statements, and certainly insulted me. And I hope everyone who listened to his short rant about where Ohio or Athens, Ohio, and who was Ohio University and all this stuff. Just because we weren't the big name place he coached at or where he was involved with in his coaching career, Lord knows what went on in those days. And I totally lost any respect I might have had for him, sober or not. I don't care what he is. I think this past weekend I watched a game, and one of the announcers, I was watching a professional game, and one of the announcers, who must be an Ohio University graduate or alum, or he attended there or something, made reference in a very healthy, positive way. Oh, by the way, after this ESPN commentator made those derogatory comments, I immediately went into basement, into the computer, and sent ESPN an email, ESPN TV, whatever it is, and I explained the story and told him how insulted I was, and I think an on-air apology, as aggressive as the negative comments were, is due immediately. And of course, I got a form letter back stating we're looking into the matter, et cetera, et cetera, and I never heard from again, nor have I seen or heard that an apology came forth from that person and ESPN Sports Center, I guess it is, or Sports Highlight. But anyway, one of the announcers on another network this past weekend made reference to one of the greatest marching bands in the country, and he referenced the Marching 110 of Ohio University, who I have seen, I think, three times perform. One is when an opening game last year at Penn State when Ohio came in and won big time at Penn State, who was starting their season, having suffered through the torment of and punishment of the current class kids, football players and others at the school, for things that happened 20 years ago, which I can't understand. But that's how the NCAA rules. They rule with what they do when they want to do it. So the guy, the announcer came on and made a great statement about Ohio University and the Marching 110, which is a tremendous band. Just go to YouTube, type in Ohio University Marching 110, the band, and spend some time with various clips of their performances. They are great. They do things on the field, especially the kids with the tuba. I mean, the acrobatics and gymnastics and the physical abilities are tremendous, along with the music, which is great. And they are a good band, and it took a year to get redemption. And I wrote a letter to that announcer thanking him and telling him the story that I just told you. So if you wait long enough, you will be redeemed. You will have pleasure. You will get even. And you don't have to rub it in anybody's face. You can just walk away smiling and say, okay, we got ours. You know, it's like in school, a lot of kids want to take their diploma or some accomplishment and go back and shove it in the face of all the people who told them they never amount to anything, they never be anything, they're not smart, blah, 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 all that negative stuff that is really harassment, badgering, and bullying. And they want to take that diploma, that piece of paper, that accomplishment, and just shove it down their throats. But the true strong person, the empowered person, decides not to do that. They elect not to go to down to that level of human waste and participate in that. So they just go about their way and sleep good at night with a smile on their face and a tender touch in their heart. And that's the way to get your redemption. You don't have to go after people. You don't have to bully them. You don't have to do what they do to make, let them have their say. That's who they are. That's how they got to where they're at. So redemption is good. And I waited, and I hope you have an experience like that sometime in your life. In the past, we've talked about, like I said, healthcare and national lottery, ethics, and all the cheating that goes on anywhere. Cheating is rampant in our world. Bribes, graft, corruption, and so forth. We know that. Trusted administrators and leaders of schools, whether private, urban, suburban, rural, wherever it is, changing scores with erasers in a dark room at night, so that the kids' results look good, so the parents are happy, so funding gets placed and money can be gotten for scholarships or from endowments or grants or whatever. And the cheating is rampant in schools. And it's terrible, because what's that? What are we telling our kids? You know, we're telling our kids, you know, do as I say, not as I do, which is the wrong message. Kids hate a mixed message. No kid likes to be told, I love you, and then smacked around the room. It's a mixed message. And they get very confused, and maybe not physically smacked around, but maybe verbally as well. I love you, you stupid idiot, that kind of thing. You know, there's a message, and there's a message about a message. When you say, I love you, and then you say, really, I do? You don't need that, really, I do, because I love you should be strong enough. It should get your point across. You don't need a message about the message or a meta message. You don't need that. Just say, I love you. Just be truthful and honest with people, and they'll respond favorably. So we have cheating with politicians. We have cheating with athletes of all kinds. Very little consequences, a slap on the wrist. We have denial, denial, denial. I mean, I've always thought that denial is one of the largest rivers in the world, but it seems to be just as large in people not accepting accountability and responsibility and consequences for their cheating. Slap on the wrist, they get the money, they go away. And the corporate cheat, I mean, every once in a while, more than not lately, you read about some big giant corporation worth billions of dollars agreeing to pay a multi-million dollar fine for doing something, which is probably built into the business plan, you know, and they just pay the fine and go on, taking in all the profits they made from their scandalous ways. But, you know, you got to keep the shareholders happy, and whatever it takes, they're going to do. And that's a sad statement. Where are our ethics, our ethics? When do you draw the line? How do we tell kids and raise them right and have them make the proper decisions when all they see around them are a constant barrage of scandalous situations? And cheating is the biggest one, whether it's cheating people out of money, cheating on tests, as I mentioned before, cheating using drugs to enhance performance. By the way, I thought all those kind of steroids and PEDs, doesn't that cause shrinkage and becoming micro and soft? I don't know. I've never used it, but I've heard rumor. We need some people to call in to verify that, if you're bold and brave enough to admit that you've become micro and soft in some capacity, whether intentional or non-intentional. So let us know what's going on in your world about that. Now, we've had cliches, and I have a list of them, and I've blurted them out the past, I think, week or two, and I want to add to them, and I want to try to figure out what they mean. In the past, we had the same page, transparency, next level, step it up, amazing, everything is amazing at the end of the day, best in class, level playing field, all in, and going forward. So those are ones that have been around. Oh, we also have root cause analysis, which is more corporate speak than anything else. And speaking of speech, why is it when I listen to a lot of females on TV, they have this like either upspeak or this this voice inflection that I don't know if they learn in communication school or they really talk like that. And it tends to be quite annoying because I don't think it's their natural voice. And it's hard to, if you just listen for 5 minutes to them, you'll hear that. It's sort of like a whiny, nasal, glottal utterance. And words come out, and more of it's cliche-ish, like this. Sportscasters always say, flat out. Hey, flat out, be, I don't know what that means. If you're flat out, you're on the ground, like flatlining, you know, number, and you got no numbers left. Boutique. I made the mistake of using boutique last week in the introduction from Bozo's Bar and Grill, beautiful boutique basement of Bozo's Bar. So I took out boutique because I just figured out, I don't know what a boutique law firm or realty firm or dress shop or any of those things, a boutique. Is it just me? Is it like the difference between a garage sale and an estate sale where you buy the same crap, only in an estate sale you spend twice as much or 10 times as much, and in a garage sale you're spending nickels and dimes? So what is a boutique? Someone let me know. Artisan? I don't know what artisan is. I know what an artist is, but I don't know what artisan is. Does it have to do with art, right? Because I think they call it bread. A lot of artisan breads or cheeses. Do artists draw cheese or paint cheese? I don't know. Handcrafted? That came out, I think, of the blended ice cream years ago up in Boston where those well-known ice cream companies were started. I think there were two or three of them. And they blended ice cream where they took three or four flavors, stuck it on a piece of wood, took a couple of spatulas, and blended everything together with all the toppings and ingredients and so forth, put it in a cup or a cone and gave it to you. They blended it, right? By the way, do you know the difference in ice cream? I don't know if I mentioned this before, but I think I used to make ice cream. In fact, I know I used to make ice cream. And we make good ice cream. I thought it was a good product. But I've often wondered what the difference is between premium, deluxe, gourmet, and just regular store brand ice cream. And the ones that are rich and creamy and taste good and have flavor more than the regular ice cream, well, regular ice cream, I think, is made with 10 to 12% milk fat. Like you buy milk at the store, it's 2%, 1%, 0% skim milk or something. Ice cream, the ice cream mix, everything starts out as vanilla, is 10 to 12%. When you get up into the gourmet, elite, fancy, expensive, all the other ones, the milk fat can be 18, 20, 22% milk fat. And that's where the flavor, the richness of it, of the flavor comes out, because you're adding more fat. It's just like a friend of mine called from down south and said, wow, I'm working down here and the food is fantastic and it's cooked with love. This person's working in the black community, and I know they cook with love down there, and a lot of the love is, you know, a lot of fat, a lot of richness in the food, and it's delicious. I told them to, you know, eat, be polite, eat it, love it, enjoy it, but don't eat too much because you'll put on the weight. But they cook with love, and let me tell you something, I just can taste it right now. Whenever I was around the black folks, I loved eating the food with them. I enjoyed, shared the bottle of Thunderbird with them. And it's a great experience. Get out and be amongst people. You know, all the race problems we have out there, I don't think they'd be there if we shared a few things. Look what the black culture has given us, right? Many things that maybe other cultures are envious and jealous of. Certainly, a handshake. I mean, there's all kinds of handshakes. You know, the regular handshake, which is reserved for other than the black culture, and they have, but we shake hands, we go with the thumb, we wrap it around, we tap out, we pound out, we dap out, we bump shoulders, we reach in, we give a hug, right? It's a wonderful gesture, a warm, welcoming gesture in the community. And of course, other cultures copied it, just as they copy the foul line dance, right? When a guy is shooting free throws in basketball, whether he makes it or miss it, the two guys in front of him who are on their team waiting for a rebound come up and give him a little tap or something like that. And the two guys behind him playing defense, getting ready for the other team to bring the ball down, they come up behind him and the shooter extends his hands backwards and they reach out and they touch. And there's touching all over the place. When they come out of a game, they're tapping out everybody. There's the high five. Where did that come from? The black community. It's a wonderful thing. Now everybody does it. And it seems to be another cliche almost, like, thank you very much, have a nice day. And it's amazing. Oh, there I go, I said it, I'm sorry. It's unusual and bizarre and weird to see so many non-black people, at especially football games and basketball games, just behaving so erratically sometimes and emotional and pounding the seats and the stands and the padding on the side and waiting for a player to jump up in the stand so they can pat him all over his body and reach out to him for scoring a touchdown or making a big play. I high-fived him. Like, it was great. I remember we took our son to a professional basketball game, and a friend of his was able to get the kids on the floor at the tunnel where the players come out. And all these little kids are standing out there waiting to high-five or low-five the players that come out just for the awe of it. You know, they're their heroes. They watch them on TV. They're larger than life. And then they see them in person. And they really are larger than life because they're big physical men and women. And it's great. I love to see the choreography, the ballet of physical ability. It's spectacular. And I'm envious and jealous myself. Even though I still play, I have very little to contribute. And I wish only one time to be able to do some of the things that I watch these players do. It's spectacular. And they're not afraid to show their emotion. And the sad part is, the athletes especially, about whom I'm speaking, when they show their emotion too much, oh, here comes the penalty or a fine or a suspension or an altercation or something, just by showing emotion. Other cultures hold their emotions in and get depressed and go to a head jockey and spend $200 an hour, where if they would just let their feelings out in a healthy, positive way, they'd be much happier people. So there's a lot to be learned from the black community as far as that, those kinds of things, emotions and feelings and attitudes and behaviors. And, you know, not everybody behaves the right way, but given the opportunity, most people will. Those folks celebrate life. They have the energy and the power to do so, and they're not afraid to show it and put it out there. And it's a great thing. It's just wonderful, and I embrace it as they embrace it. And you know, it's a terrible thing, is dance. Before I come on the air at bbsradio.com, when the live show, 9 o'clock Tuesday evenings, I get pumped up. I get juiced by listening to some blue-eyed soul music. And what is blue-eyed soul? I'll give you some examples. We have the Righteous Brothers. We have Journey with Arnel Pineda, the Filipino kid who took over for the lead singer, who sounds just as good, in fact, the same as the lead singer. When they sing their song Separate Ways, I just get pumped, and I'm ready to do a show all night. And I listen to Joe Cocker, Unchain My Heart, and he's got some soul in there, right, with music and feelings. I watch the dancers in the Steve Winwood Roll With It video, and I listen to Michael McDonald from, I think, the Doobie Brothers, and he's got some soul. You can feel it. You can see it in his face and his body language as he sits there at the piano playing and singing his songs. It's like automatic. It's part of his character. It is his soul. And I like to know and believe that I have more soul than I can control. And for other forms of soul awareness, I listen to Rudy Ray Moore, a great comedian from many years back. I first learned about him in the 70s after I got out of the service, and a funny, funny guy, and listening to him perform in his community is wonderful. I have another great story about Rudy Ray Moore. I met him in person with two other white guys, and he was quite shocked to see us at the opening of his movie Dolomite in Philadelphia. Three of us were there, and he came right up to us when he got out of his limousine with his entourage and his cane and his big hat and his heavy big white coat, and he said to us, "What are you guys doing here?" And we said, "Rudy, we love you. We listen to you every day at work. That's how we get through it. And we're in the car going from job to job. We love your stuff. We love Dolomite. We love all your characters." And he said, "Damn, you guys come with me." And he sat us right in front of him, center of a packed movie theater in Philadelphia, the only three white guys, with more soul than they ever thought they could control. And we weren't smart enough to get his autograph. We were just in such awe of being with Rudy. I guess the same way the little kids were when we took them to the basketball game and they saw their heroes out there, or their favorite players. Nobody's a hero, but their favorite players. And the other one, in more modern day times, not so much for the soul, but for his message of pain and struggle in the world, is a guy named Immortal Technique. I think that's his stage name, but he sings a lot of songs. One of the great ones is A Point of No Return. So go on to YouTube, find some of these people, and listen to them, and you will get some soul, maybe a better understanding of cultures outside of yours. And the food is great. The food is absolutely great. And maybe you'll make a friend. Nothing wrong with that. It's a wonderful thing. My friend down in Alabama is having a great, great time. Great time. And she's welcomed and embraced. And she has people come up to her and say, "You got that nice white girl hair. I never seen that before." And she laughs and does her job and goes about her business. It's wonderful. The other day I talked about Eminem and how much I enjoy his work. And I quoted as best as I can remember. Nowadays, everybody's talking like they got something to say, but nothing comes out when they move their lips. Nothing but a bunch of gibberish. And I was reading years ago a poem that got into my head. And the key line, the refrain, I guess it's called in a poem, is by T.S. Eliot. Thank you for having this, Mr. Eliot. I don't know your business or baggage or history, but I guess I could look it up on Wiki. But he said in his poem about the love song of J. Alfred Prufrock, "In the room, the women come and go, talking of Michelangelo." And they sit there, and I can just envision them talking about all the great work that Michelangelo did, and not knowing anything about, you know, "Oh, his mood must have been this. He was feeling that." You don't know anything. You're talking a bunch of gibberish, like you know something, just to have something to say. But it has no importance, no significance. Sort of like what we listen to on the big screen TVs every day and every night, 24 hours a day. It's just incredible how things repeat. Remember a while back I said, as a youth you get information. As you get older it turns into knowledge. when you get old into your senior years, God willing, your 80s, your 90s, your 100s, and so forth, all that knowledge, information that turns into knowledge turns into wisdom. It's all the same stuff, right? It's just been redefined and passed down to, from generation to generation. So we really don't have anything earth-shattering to contribute. We're just repeating the same things. And people act as if they know what they're talking about. And that's what Eminem talks about. That's what Elliot spoke about in that refrain. And that's what all they do on TV is to confuse, obfuscate issues that need clarity, which we never get, and also just to fill time, because they have 24 hours a day to fill. And speaking of Eminem, the other night I stayed up to watch his great movie, 8 Mile. But unfortunately, I fell asleep halfway through. I only saw 4 miles. So I think it's on this weekend. I'm going to try to catch the last 4 miles and see him battle, because I can do my own battling sometimes, but on a different night, not tonight. I'll save that for another day. So we're getting back to the cliches that I mentioned before, like, you know, same page and transparency. We're adding boutique and artisan, handcrafted. I got off on that, handcrafted. What the heck is a handcrafted hamburger? It's a guy in the back making a hamburger patty and maybe pressing it down with a weight of some kind to make it wider and thinner. I don't know, handcrafted. How else are you going to make it? Infused? I'm confused about infused. I have no idea what infused. I mean, is it injected with stuff? Is it human growth hormone? Is it going to make me micro and soft? What's going on with infusion? Critical mass. Now, for many people, it is critical that they get to mass. But I have no idea what critical mass is. Now, I know it's probably some science thing or some business thing, but it was. I had some people try to explain it to me, and it just came out like a bunch of gibberish, sort of like Eminem and T.S. Eliot. Eclectic, that's a bit old, but it's coming back in vogue right now because everyone wants to have an eclectic meal. And I figure the more you spend for one of these eclectic meals that you see on the fancy, crazy, yelling, screaming TV food shows where they run around like they're on hyperdrive with OCD and ADHD and ADD and all these other manufactured illnesses or conditions that have appeared over the past generation or two, past generation, not two, because I'm part of the two. I don't know what's going on. They just run around like crazy. Now they have kids doing it. I saw one of those cooking shows where the kids, 30 seconds left, kids, go, go, go. Wow, man. So anyway, the more you pay for a meal at these fancy restaurants where everything is like stacked and piled and they have something drizzled on the side on a square or, pretty much a square white plate that has bevels on it, to give it some dynamics and some character. Three scallops, one carrot with the tail still on it, a couple of asparagi, and some other, maybe a mushroom or a caper or something, $32.50. And you go away hungry. I went one time down in D.C. I was with someone. We were having dinner in a hotel, and it was one of those, and this is a long time ago, one of those, $28 medallions of veal. I didn't know what it was. I'm not that worldly. A medallion. You know what a medallion is? It's the size of a quarter. And you got three of them. It was $28. So we finished up. We left a tip. And we went down to Georgetown to get a pizza and a beer because we were hungry. So, the more you pay, the less you get. And it's supposed to be elegant, gourmet, and very highly filled with adjectives, like infused, right? You don't go to those restaurants anymore. They're called gastropubs. Gastropubs is a restaurant. I don't know how that happens. We need to change things. It's recycling. It's not information. It's knowledge. It's wisdom. It goes from a coffee shop to a restaurant to a gastropub. It's the same thing, served by the same people, only it costs a lot more. Speaking of tips, I mentioned once before that the word tips, T-I-P-S, is an acronym, and it means to ensure proper service. In the old days, the tip was given at the beginning of service when the dining party arrived. The server would go to the what was perceived as the person who was going to pay the bill, and the tip was given then. So if you had a party of six for dinner, average price $20 for dinner, $120, 20% tip is like $24 or $26, whatever it is. And if you got that kind of tip, you gave good service. Oh, let me fill your water. I'll bring more bread. Let me get you another napkin, more napkins, something for the kids, whatever it is. And if the tip was only $2 or $3, then your food was coming out cold, stale, and late. and last. So to ensure proper service is an acronym that's created for the word tips. And if you've ever, and I've known guys, mostly guys in the past, never really spoke to women about it. I've known guys who used to brag that they didn't leave tips, or they left a couple of dollars on a $50 or $70 check. And once they told me that, I never wanted to be around them again, because people who don't tip never worked for tips. Just like people who never hitchhiked won't pick up a hitchhiker. Now, I'm not saying that in today's world you don't do that, but back in the day, that's another one, cliche, a couple of decades ago, hitchhiking was a mode of transportation. You could trust in your environment. And today you can't, because there's too many people who are out there who shouldn't be out there that are going to go to places. Once the jails and prisons let out all the people who are in there for marijuana charges, small amounts or whatever it is, I'm not that familiar with it, but once they empty out the accommodations in places of incarceration for the minor drug offense, usually marijuana, they're going to fill it up with all the people who shouldn't be on the streets, because they're going to be dangerous. They're going to be the shooters. They're going to be the hostage. They're going to be whatever it is. They're going to be the ones causing all the chaos and trouble and causing lockdowns all over the place. Why? Because they're closing all the mental health accommodations out there. Halfway houses are closing up, boarding houses or group homes, whatever they're called. Services are being terminated in places like that. So the people who need care, treatment, isolation from society are going to be out on the streets. And I don't know how many more incidents we can take, like the tragedies that have occurred in the past 5 years, wherever they're at. In the city, in the country, at a school, at a university, at a mall, anywhere. We have to cleanse ourselves. We have to purge ourselves so that we can send our kids to the park and playground so they can do the most important thing kids have to do, and that's play. We have to isolate our kids now. We shelter them, hide them from the bad guys. That's why all these electronic things out there have such great sales, because kids are brainwashed into believing this is what you do with your time, as opposed to climbing a tree, riding a bike, going fishing, splashing in a pond, going snow sledding, whatever it is, outdoor physical activity. Kids need to get up, get out, get going, and guess what? So do you. So do you, because you know what? The obesity level is way up there. It's way up there, and you look in the mirror, you don't need a scale to tell you that. Just look at how you've grown, and the time is now to shrink. If economies can shrink, so can people. If populations need to shrink, which is why sometimes we used to have big wars, now we have war by association or distance war, like distance learning. You know, you put a guy in a drone out in California or Nevada, and he does his work, goes home, takes his kid to the soccer game and McDonald's, and that's a wonderful thing, right? And there's one other cliche I want to add that I forgot about. It's boots on the ground. Boots on the ground. Right? Because we're not going to have boots on the ground. That's all the politicians are saying it. If you go to any station, boots on the ground, no boots on the ground, we don't want boots on the ground. And so it's now becoming one of these overused, and I feel sorry for all the words in our language that become rote, repetitive, redundant, and cliche, because it loses meaning. Right? It loses meaning. Curse words don't have any so-called curse words, profanity. They have very little meaning. Kids use them all the time. People use them all the time. WTF, right? I try not to use them on the radio show here. Not that I'm perfect. I had a lot of time in the locker room and on the streets and in the military and the college and so forth. So I know what they are, and sometimes I choose not to use them. I choose to think of other words that are better suited, and I don't want to come on as someone who's going to shock you with things. But I do think micro and soft is kind of funny, and I think there's a lot of guys out there who, as they get older, will agree once they overcome their embarrassment. But boots on the ground has become a cliche, and we got to get rid of it, because it's a waste. It has no meaning. When you hear something, you get desensitized. It doesn't mean anything to you. A lot of kids are desensitized now, because all they say is bang them up, blow them up, shoot them up, movies, TV shows, video games. Not that they're going to turn out that way, but that's what they know, right? We had it in our house. I saw it all the time. And you just tell the kids, hey, listen, this is play. This is not the kind of play you do. This is something on a rainy day or when you're snowed in. Otherwise, get the heck out of the house, grab some buddies, and go play. make up games. You know, what do you call that? Manhunt. Kids used to play manhunt at night at the park. Well, they can't anymore. Why? Because the bad guys are out. Right? There's more adults sometimes at little kid playgrounds after dinner before it gets dark than there are kids because we're so afraid that something is going to happen because we hear about it all the time. Not that this kind of stuff didn't happen a generation or two ago. It did. We just didn't know about it because there weren't 24-hour news stations to fill time with stories that aren't really news. They're tragic, yes. There's not a lot of happy stuff out there. We don't hear good stuff. And if you do, it's like 12 seconds and see you later. Back to, they have trials. They try cases on TV and they talk to jurors. And people love that stuff. Folks, get up, get out, get going. You're bored and you don't know it. You're being brainwashed and you don't know it. That's not the way the world is. Have some fun. Do something. Boredom. You know, the enemy of us all. I have three books. Need a publisher. If someone, there's a publisher out there, give me a call or send me an email at hamp73@gmail.com. Marty Ford, You About Ready on bbsradio.com. If you want to phone in, there's still some time, 888-627-6008. I have three books. Power Up Your Power. It's about empowerment. Doing things for yourself, for yourself, by yourself, that make you a better person and help you make you feel good about yourself. And allows you, once you start having some success, you want a little bit more, like a sweet taste of honey, as opposed to fake sugar or sugar substitute or whatever they call that stuff. The more success you have, the more they want, and you'll be surprised. You'll be accomplishing more than you ever thought possible when you become empowered. Whether you're in recovery or not, you're still, people struggling with recovery need to become empowered. They have to learn how to do that. And guess what? So do people who are sitting in front of the screen every night getting brainwashed. You need to become empowered. You need to get out, get up, get out, get going, and do something healthy, positive, fun. And you need to fight boredom. Whichever way you're going to do it, a hobby, an interest, social, playing cards with your friends, listening to music while you're playing cards, not eating 10 donuts and drinking stuff you shouldn't be indulging too much of as the night goes on, right? You don't need all that junk. Have an apple or a carrot, and that's it. But enjoy the socialness of it. Card playing is wonderful. People used to go house hopping when neighborhoods were around, and they would play cards, especially on the weekend nights. Kids would play outside. When they come in, they play in the basement or in some other room, and the adults or grown-ups or parents would play cards and talk and chat and have a good social evening. And guess what? It didn't cost a lot of money. It was fine. A deck of cards, a couple bucks even back then. So get up, get out, get going. Become empowered. Let your kids play. Play with them. Show them how to do it. Teach them how to do it. But let them play. They'll be creative. You'd be surprised. A long time ago, someone said, well, kids don't have language. Right? And they put a bunch of preschoolers in a room. And guess what? They had language. But the experts who did all their studies said they didn't. Right? Well, when you give somebody a chance to do something, they're going to do the right thing. Because nobody ever went wrong doing the right thing. And so let your kids play. Involve them in youth sports. And when you do, stay away. Don't turn into one of these whacked out parents yelling, screaming, cursing, belittling, badgering, harassing not only the kids, but the officials at the game, other parents at the game. Stay away. Go do something. You know, go for a walk. Every park that has a soccer or baseball or other field hockey game, there's a park there. Go take a walk. Swing on the swings. Climb a tree. Play catch with another person. But get away from it. Your kids will do fine. Don't live your life vicariously through them. They don't need it. It's unhealthy. And you don't need it, too. This is your time. I used to take the kids to the games, and I watched. But I also would do something for myself, and I would usually take a walk, maybe with another person, or sit around and chat on some chairs, not harassing the game and ruining it for us, or for the kids. Because you know what? They get embarrassed. They don't need that because they have friends they deal with. And especially when they're in their early years, early teenage years, you set a bad example. So get the heck away. Go out and do something for yourself. And especially at youth sports game, there's something about the game that gets, I think this is why parents like to watch the game, because it gives them an opportunity to have an artificial climax, or maybe a real one, I don't know. I'll use a soccer game as an example.
And so a soccer team is moving the ball down, and they're passing it, and it's a good pass, and it's close game, and the time's running out, and if they get a score, and they get close, and the kid takes a shot, and everybody holds their breath and goes, oh, and lets out a sigh of disappointment or a cheer of relief, depending on if the ball went in. And if you listen to it and you compare notes from your personal experience or any other form of entertainment, you'll hear similarities in physical, biological, human climax. And I think that's why parents go. They don't even know it. But if you step back and listen to the crowd cheer and yell and all that stuff, they'll reach that point where like they're holding their breath and all of a sudden, kaboom, right? And especially when a goal goes in. That's the ultimate reward. But don't let that be known to the kids, because they don't need to know that stuff for another 10 years. So forth and so on with that. But let the kids play. Let them play. They will have fun. And you'll have fun too, not having to worry about it. But you got to watch out for the bad guys. And maybe someday the bad guys won't be around in mass as they are right now. Not critical mass. I think I use the MASSE form of en masse. So that's it for cliches for this week. So we added flat out, boutique, artisan, handcrafted, infused, critical mass, eclectic, and gastro pub. We have time. So bad behavior by parents is modeled by the kids. Unfortunately, you can control that. What we can control is bad modeling by people who the kids have in their lives. What they see on TV, especially if they watch the news, where six people are talking at the same time and none of them get their point across and they end up yelling at each other saying, let me finish. It's my turn to talk. Where do you think kids get that from when they're having a discussion, an argument, a confrontation with maybe their parents or teachers or peers, right? Everybody wants to be heard right now. And I think it goes back to my favorite TV show, watching with my kids, which was the Power Rangers. And the Red Ranger would always say, we need dinosaur power now. And he needs it right now. Immediate gratification. This was in, I think, the 90s, which I'm sure it's been around longer than that. But that's when I first became aware or cognizant of it, to use a bigger word. But we need it right now. We need right now. We got to have it. And we need to learn to be a little bit more patient. But bad behavior. Take athletes for a minute. Have you ever seen an athlete commit a foul, throw his arms up in the air and say, what? What'd I do? I didn't do anything. Excuse me. What was that? I didn't, right? And I see it. I was watching a kid's soccer game in high school recently, and half the kids on the team would either, you know, bump into somebody or the ball would be taken or get kicked. What? Ref, where's the foul? And then when they get whistled for a foul or called for a foul, or carded for a foul, they say, well, what did I do? He did it. I didn't do anything. And it goes back to the blame game, right, where I can't do anything wrong. And where do we get that from? All the insanity that's portrayed and given to us on the brainwashing part of TV, where nobody does anything wrong. No one is a criminal, right? And why do we have justice for the criminals? Where the hell did it? Where's the victims? What about them? Where are they going? Like that guy up in the football player I mentioned a few weeks ago, former professional football player whose house got trashed, and he was trying to do it, make a learning experience for the kids who did it, was going to offer some help for them and a chance to redeem themselves, redemption, as I mentioned before. And what happened? He got turned around and got sued by the parents of the kids. My kid didn't do it. Not my kid. You'll not ruin my kid's reputation. It won't go on his record. He's going to get into a good school. It might jeopardize. No. So the guy said, whoa, what's this? So he's backed off on his idea of or notion of trying to provide help in a time of need, because it was a cry for help, like a lot of things are. And parents don't want to believe that, because they're too busy with their own life, too busy micromanaging their kid, and they live in a fantasy world of disbelief that their kid would ever, ever do anything wrong. I've got a hint. Your kids smoke, your kids drink, your kids use drugs, your kids engage in bodily exchange of substances, and that's what they do. And if you think they don't, wake up and come into the reality of this generation, of this era in time, because when you think back to it, you did it too, right? You did it too. So don't expect your kids to be different than you, as much as you want to shelter, isolate them, and keep them perfect, because you know what? Perfect does not exist. perfect does not exist, and you'll go crazy micromanaging your kid's life, and you'll make them crazy. And that's when they walk away from you. And if you live on the East Coast, they end up going to a college on the West Coast and never coming home because you're nuts, right? You're crazy for doing all the kinds of things you're doing. Let kids be kids, and they'll be fine. They have to make mistakes. They have to learn from their mistakes. They don't need you to mop up everything that they did wrong. They're going to fail a test. They're going to not pass their driver's exam. What are you going to do? Hire somebody to take it for them like they did in the SATs up somewhere, I think in New York or Connecticut or something? Kid got made a lot of money taking SATs. The security. Don't they have security for those things? I know when my kids took it, it was like they needed everything. IDs, picture IDs, passes, admission, gate pass, or whatever they call it. It was, and then proctored and monitored. So how did someone sneak in to cheat? Another form of cheating. Pay somebody to take my SAT so I can get into a good school, and a kid who's deserving can't get in. What is that about? Where is the fairness? So the athletes, the kids do the same thing as they do in their behavior, and it's a tough thing. And we don't need that. You don't need to be on the sidelines displaying poor behavior because your kids are going to model that. I'm not perfect, but I never screamed at a referee. If anything, I yelled was words of encouragement, words of motivation, words of inspiration. Because remember, this hour of power before you shower is all about empowerment. And when you empower your kids, they succeed. You don't want to enable them. If they're away and they come home and you're still making their bed and doing their laundry and cooking all their meals, you're not helping them. Because eventually they're going to have to do it on their own. Right? Eventually they're going to have to do it on their own. A friend of mine took over his family's business, and he was good for a while. Then we were talking, he said, geez, I wish somebody told me how to fill out these forms or open a bank account or do something. Right? It's horrible that we don't teach our kids. We give them stuff. They're loaded with stuff. Go into any kid's room, it's filled with stuff, floor to ceiling and around the room, but they don't know how to take care of the basics, the little things in life, how to pay a bill, how to pay something, not to incur fees or service charges on credit cards, how to handle and manage a credit card, right? They know how to go, they can, you know, program a DVR or tape something off TV. They can adjust your cell phone all over the place. Those are just things, learned skills. Well, so is taking care of the basics in life, like filling out forms. Huh. How many of you have struggled with college applications? Come on, it's out there all over. Let the kids do it. Yeah, they need help. You got to guide them. But when they do it, they feel better about themselves. And you feel good for them because they did it autonomously. No one can do it alone, by the way. That's why we're here, right? A kid goes away to school, comes home Christmas time for dinner, and says, after graduation, he says, you know, Mom and Dad, it's amazing what you've learned. It's the word amazing. It's astonishing. How about astonishing? It's astonishing how much you've learned in the 4 years I've been away. Isn't it something how much you've learned in the 4 years I've been away? So what has happened is the information they had as a kid has now turned into knowledge. And in decades to come, that will turn into wisdom, which they will pass down to the next generation, and so on, and so on, and so on. Differences. One last thing I wanted to talk about, differences. We talked about men and women, the difference between men and women, which is quite hilarious, I must admit. A house and a home, offensive and defensive linemen, which again is quite funny, me being a defensive lineman. Here's one. Two women go to a wedding and they wear the same dress. Well, it's a crisis. They go home yelling and screaming. They got to change clothes. What did you do? So forth and so on. And 100 guys come in a black tuxedo with a white shirt and a black tie. And they have good taste. Two women, it's a crisis. 100 guys have good taste. Difference between men and women. This has been Marty Ford on BBSRadio.com. The name of the show is You About Ready. You can call into the station at 888-627-6008. You can send me an email at hamp73@gmail.com. Let me know what you think of the show. If you have anything to say and comment on it, please call in. I get lonely talking to myself all night, and I hope someone's out there listening. So it's good to know that. We all need some support somewhere. Power. Absolute power is in the power of definition. Eight girls in a sorority. Did you know this? Eight girls in a sorority was once, I don't know if it still is, maybe in some states it is, was considered a brothel. Because someone defined it as being that. So they could have seven, I guess, and it was all right. But once they hit eight, no way, had to shut it down or move somewhere else, create another one. So the power of definition. The government says a family of four living on $20,000 a year, whatever the number is considered poverty and therefore eligible for assistance, government assistance of all kinds. But so the power of definition did that. It could have said 50,000. They could have said 5,000. But they said, okay, 20,000. And I'm sure some accounting numbers type people came up with that formula after years and years of research. And they did a, here's what they did. They did a root cause analysis of the situation. They came up with that as their solution for it, as their definition, regardless of who takes credit for it, right? Which we know who takes credit for it. All the people with the loud mouths in the big positions, usually bullies. And the power of definition, if men, because usually men write the rules, and that one about the brothel, I'm sure, was written by men. And if men gave birth, things would be a lot different. When my wife was giving birth, we were considered high risk. And that's not too intimate a detail to put out there. And it worked out well, thank God. We're blessed with two wonderful kids. But the doctor said, you know, maybe you should stay another night. And I was sure, you know. And I stayed and slept on the floor and scared the maintenance lady in the middle of the night. So I gave her the two candy bars that my parents had bought for my wife to eat. I gave them to the maintenance person so she could calm down. Because when she walked in and saw me on the floor, she thought it was a corpse. But we had to, so we got a bill for that extra night from either the hospital or somebody. And we said, what the heck is this? And what happened was, had we called ahead of time and let the insurance company know, they may have extended that courtesy of a second night in the hospital for my wife. But since we didn't, we have to pay an additional fee. Well, to offset that, my wife's doctor forgave a like-kind amount of money for his fee, and so it washed out. But the goal of the insurance company to control the lives of women and have that much of a say, because they write the rules, they have the power of definition, and that's sad. Because if it was up to men to give birth, there'd never be another baby born in the world. You know, going through and see what changes my wife had to go through physiologically, physically, emotionally, and no man would ever stand for that. Once those hemorrhoids came, you're out. Take the baby and run. I'm going to go play ball, right? So the power of definition is a good thing because someone needs to define it. But when it gets out of control and it's not equitable and fair, then we have problems. And it's not right. Ugh. Ouch. I just banged my foot. One other difference that I want to talk about, and I think I'm going to go because I'm getting cold. I have a chill from playing basketball, and I'm in the basement of Bozo's Bar and Grill and Tonsawash Station, and I took my shower, and it's a little chilly down here. Not well insulated. It's getting cool on the East Coast at night. The difference between religion and spirituality. I mentioned it briefly before. Religion is a set of definitive rules with guidelines based on the power of definition and of the leadership and things you must follow and do and think and believe in. Whereas spirituality, you create your own world. And that's where so many people have so many problems. Because I've read and attended lectures on spirituality, and I'm confused as hell. And what it boils down to is you make it up. You become eclectic. You take a little bit of the good things that make you feel good about yourself and just build your own world. And if a lot more people did that, it'd be a better place. So you wouldn't have to depend on rely on a finite set of definitive rules that you may or may not agree with. You can go your own way. You can still belong because belonging in a religious community is part of the social component of life. Although you have to question religion sometimes because so many millions of people over the years and today are killed in the name of religion. And it's all based on ignorance, right? I don't know about your religion, so I'm going to hate you. I don't know about your culture, I'm going to hate you, you know? Living overseas for 3 years, I was fortunate enough to learn about the cultures of a couple of Asian countries, and it's quite beautiful. Besides the culture, you learn about the food, right? I think food is a great neutralizer. If everybody just shared their homeland food, the world would be a better place, right? I'd have to go easy on the hot and spicy stuff because I am old and the guts are starting to fall apart. But, you know, I'll go home and eat oatmeal. But that would make for a better world, I think, if we better understanding. Certainly music, art, language, clothing, right? It's wonderful to learn about other people's beliefs and how they get to there. And then you can bring in the religious component and accept it and not fight it, not deny it, not ridicule it, not belittle it, and not kill in the name of it. What the heck is that about? It's awful. But people in the spiritual world see the world a little bit differently. Maybe like left-handed people. They see the world a little bit more differently. I happen to believe left-handed people are probably more creative than those in the right hand. I only say that because I'm right-handed and I can't even play the radio. But a lot of the people I've seen over the years who create magnificent art that usually ends up sitting in the basement of Bozo's Bar and Grill and Tonsawa Station or places like that are left-handed. And it's great. When I was a kid, a big disappointment came to me because where a lot of people learn about gambling was at the bingo hall. And we were at a bingo hall where my dad worked, and he worked a bingo game as well. And I won. I made a bingo one time. And I was about 7 years old. And you go up to the prize table, which I did, and there in front of me was a baseball bat. And wow, 7, 8-year-old kid with a baseball bat, his own, big league stuff, right? Louisville Slugger, if you recall those days. And I went to pick it up, and the guy behind there, he said, "Are you left-handed or right-handed?" I said, "Well, I'm right-handed. I bat righty." He said, "Oh, that's a left-handed bat." And I got, oh, I was so forlorn. I started to cry. I went over to my dad and my mom, and I said, "Oh, I wanted the bat, but it's for a left-hander." And they said, "What? Go get that bat. That's for anybody." And I went back, and I said to the guy, "Well, I'm going to give this to my brother because he's a left-hander, right?" And the guy said, "Okay, that's good." And all was fine with the world. I got my bat. My brother and I shared it. And up until a few years ago, I still had it somewhere. It's all cracked and rotted. But it's one of those things you hold on to because it has fond memories of youth. And I hope kids of today have fond memories of their youth, mainly because most of it coming from play and work and relationships and fun and family. So that's the story on that. Oh, I have one last thing to talk about because it's a theory about sports. A lot of athletes, professional and college, are, and younger, I've seen them in high schools, are going down with like season-ending and maybe career-ending injuries. And most of it's centered around the knee with the ACL, the MCL, the meniscus, and all the other things that I don't know anything about. And the theory is that a lot of these players, athletes, are taking steroids. My theory is unsubstantiated, undocumented, unscientific, and probably not true. But it's good to have a theory once in a while, petty as it is. The theory is that they're either ingesting or shooting themselves up or in some other way taking steroids, which pumps up muscles. The muscles, an 18-year-old has the muscles of a 25-year-old, thick, strong, developed, et cetera, et cetera. Unfortunately, the ligaments and tendons that go around that those muscles depend on aren't growing at the same rate. There's a disproportionate sizing and strengthening of these three or four parts of the body. So when you get hit in the muscle, you can react and nothing, you know, risk of injury is lessened because the muscle is so more developed. But the ligaments and tendons are weaker than the muscles, and they're taking a pounding. And you're running and cutting and making changes in your moves and doing all these other kinds of things athletically, and the muscles and the tendons and ligaments can't take it, and they give out. And it's a very simplistic explanation for it, but there seems to be a couple every week, maybe more, of athletes out for the season or longer due to this type of thing, based on the fact that if you believe that steroids are rampant in sports in throughout the school, from high school all the way up to the professional level, probably. And it's just sad to see careers ruined and careers cut short, and so many kids in need of rehabilitation of their bodies for the sake of the sport. I don't know. It just seems odd that such things are happening in today's world with the athletes. So, so many of them who get caught out there, usually the pros and some of the high-profile college ones, get caught out there, and all they do is, "I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything. I'll take a punishment, but I'm not admitting I did anything." Anyway, that's the show for tonight. This is Marty Ford on BBSRadio.com. The name of the show is You About Ready. I'm dry. I'm parched. I could use a shot of starch to get me going. And it's time to sign off by saying, power up your power, because the power is in you.